Valley with Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally. It's good to be back. It's episode 5 of the series and we're halfway through. We hope you stuck with us so far. We had some crackers to begin with. We've had some okay ones so far and let's be honest, we're at the midway point. We possibly need to pull our fingers out now. But hey, we don't know what's going to happen. I'll tell you what's coming up. We're going to have Jack Bennion. Say hello, Jack Bennion.
Hello.
And we've got Ryan Champion. Say hello, Ryan Champion.
Hello, Ryan Champion.
There you go. Thank you. I see what you did there. Well done, Ryan Champion. You are a comic genius. And later on, we're going to have Chris Ingram fresh from returning from Zlin, and he's going to tell us all about that victory on the ERC Junior round and also a couple of things, what's coming up for him as well. So looking forward to talking to him about what's going on there. So, but as ever at this point of the podcast, I'm sure you know by now, you know the format. We talk all things headlines and we talk news, a little bit of gossip and some bits and pieces, mainly from MN. And so we're going to go to pages 2 and 3 for your, our overseas listeners. If you're unfamiliar with this, pages 2 and 3 at MN are the golden ticket, I think it's fair to say, isn't it, Jack?
That's magical. That's a great way of describing it.
It's a golden ticket. If you're there, then something's going well for you. And the three people that I can see on that page are been guests at some point of our podcast, which is Craig Breen, Elvin Evans, and Mark Higgins. Now, tell our listeners if they have not seen Motorsport News this week, and shame on them if they haven't. But if they are overseas, just tell our listeners what's going on.
Well, we've got the Rally Isle of Man coming up. It starts on the 15th of September and it's the final round of the British Rally Championship. After the Ulster, which was the previous round, we were a bit nervous about what was going to happen on the Rally Isle of Man because Elvin Evans and Robert Duggan have wrapped up the teammate championship. So it looked like maybe going a bit flat. But now we've got entries from Craig Breen and a Citroen DS3 R5. Of course, Craig won the Circuit of Ireland earlier this year. And we've also got Mark Higgins returning to the event for the first time since, I think, 2009 when he won. So it's a great two additions to the entry list and should make for a really exciting event.
What's quite unique about you describing that is that you sounded like Robocop for part of it, which was quite special. Only Skype can do that to a person, or indeed Omni Technologies. A little bit of a parochial bit of a quote there. If you're into the films.
Robocop, that is a good film.
Yeah, what was it? Omni. What was the name of the company that built Robocop?
Omnicorp.
Omnicorp. That's it. You went all Omnicorp on us. So I don't know whether you're on 4G or Wi-Fi or whatever, but perhaps look for a stronger link. There's hope for you yet, isn't it? Mark Higgins is back on the Manx.
Well, is this a rally programme? I thought I'd come on a film podcast or something.
Oh, shush.
Well, it's funny you should say that. I was thinking it'd be great to see how Mark goes. It might give us old boys some hope, eh, Tony?
I don't need hope. I need a miracle and possibly one of those three boys towing me.
just before we came on, I was looking at Mark's Manx history. I mean, obviously he's won it 5 times, which is quite well known. But he's actually started the Manx 18 times, so he hasn't done the rally for a while. But he should definitely still know most of the roads. I don't think they've built too many new ones on the Isle of Man, and it'll be fascinating to see how he gets on against Craig Breen and Elvin Evans. I mean, it's not like Mark will be completely rusty. He's been competing in China. He's, he's still driving regularly. So it'll be great to see. I think it'd be really interesting.
I think, as you said before, Jack, I think we were all a little bit concerned of the damn squid, perhaps the Isle of Man becoming, really. As you say, both championships tied up. There's one more important one that needs to be tied up over there, which we'll talk about, I'm sure, he says tongue-in-cheek. But, you know, we were all a little bit concerned. Was it just going to be an end-of-season foray? But at the end of the day, it's not a cheap rally. It's possibly the most expensive round of the BRC to go and do.
Yeah, I think everyone's been rewarded now, the fact that those three are turning up, because, you know, if you're in an R5, then you get to go and test yourself against three of the best people you'd probably want to test yourself against right now in an R5 car. So it's a great opportunity for the people who put their entries in. Now, there's only one championship some Liverpoolians entered to finish up on now. So, yeah, that's about it.
Hey, let's not tempt fate. Be careful what we talk about. I'm very superstitious with stuff like that. I am touching wood now. Keep it clean. That's all I'll say. Keep it clean. Rallying's kind of then, we've gone from pages 2 and 3, but we've got a very, very nice piece that David Evans has wrote with regards to Alvida saying Jos. Obviously, there was a piece last week with regards to Jos's last interview before he departed for Formula One. And David is talking the reasons why perhaps we'll miss him.
Yeah, absolutely. He's definitely going to be someone who's missed from the sport. He's done a fantastic job at Volkswagen, as everyone knows, and he's got a lot of history doing different bits and bobs. He's done Sauber in Formula One and things like that. So I think it's definitely a negative that he's gone. But it's great, as David Evans says, to show that people can move up into Formula One from WRC and still prove that, you know, the staff come through are of the calibre that Formula One is, really.
I guess, and again, I don't know whether your signal's dropping off a little bit there, Jack, but we lost a split second of that, but it wasn't too bad. But, I think what kind of made me chuckle and also wince a little bit is that he's talking about, Jos is talking about his love for McLaren and being a fan of McLaren and Bruce McLaren and everything else. But there's a quote there taken directly from apparently a conversation he had with Ron Dennis, of course, who's now the boss of McLaren, who asked him what rallying was.
Right, well, I'll bear that one in mind next time I go through those doors at walking, because I do happen to pass that way now and again, so I can talk to Jost about Bruce McLaren's history and maybe just brush up on Ron's rallying history as well. I had a wry smile there when Jack said Jost Capito will be missed in WRC. I think he'll be missed by some, maybe not by others. He is obviously commercial characters, but certainly done a fantastic job with the Volkswagen team, and a big part of their success. A very capable pair of hands in Sven Smeets taking over from him.
Again, it's Sven Smeets been around now. I'll be honest with you, I was kind of thinking back to I'll use a football analogy, which I know you're going to wince at, right? But Jack will possibly be able to relate to this a little bit more. People always talk about new management structures coming through and taking inspiration perhaps from managers that they've worked with themselves in the past. And I was thinking about who Sven Smeets has sat with and everything else. And I just had this. I just wonder whether he's going to take inspiration perhaps from a boss of his, from Peugeot. Who used to like the odd cigar, I seem to remember.
Yeah, Primero certainly liked the big cigar, and like you said, Sven Smeets had a very successful co-driving career for Belgian drivers with Freddy Loix, a long time partner of Freddy Loix during Freddy's success, and then also moved on to Francois Duval before moving into a management role. But he certainly is a man with a lot of all-round experience of WRC.
Jack, do you guys, again, he's very much gone under the radar, Sven. I think he's just kind of worked his way up, as Ryan's just been describing there. You guys have much dealings with him at all?
Yeah. Well, he's one of those people who sort of seems to be everywhere around Service Park, and that's always a sign for me of someone who knows what they're doing and someone who has good influence on the team that they're in, because, he's like a dynamo around that Service Park. He was at GB last year. I remember seeing him everywhere. So, that's always a sign of a good leader and someone who should be moving up the structure, really.
Absolutely. Now, moving on from that, and I guess a legend driving a legend, a lovely image, right? I don't know whether you've seen it yet, but Sebastian Loeb made his competitive debut in a Peugeot 205 T16 last weekend, and it's a stunning image of a very, very nice looking car, and he still loves getting out there, doesn't he?
Oh yeah, and particularly in something like that. I mean, obviously, it's just an iconic car from World Championship history. And I did catch a bit of footage on social media of him throwing it around, and he seemed to be really enjoying it. And obviously, that's one of the things he can do now. He hasn't got the pressure of a regular World Championship program like he had in the past, and it's allowing him to do some things probably that he wanted to do.
Do you think this stuff, I noticed, I always have a little bit of a glance at what's going on Rallycross. Obviously, I've got a little bit of background from working in the media at Rallycross, and Hal Ridge, again, who's a pal of mine who covers Rallycross for you guys, Jack, and he's talking about, obviously, the pull of Loeb for the next round of World Rallycross, but it hasn't really happened, has it, for Sebastian Loeb? When you look at what the Hansons have done themselves, the young kids in the Peugeots, it hasn't quite worked out for Sebastian Loeb there.
Not really, no. It's not quite come off for him yet, has it? I mean, you know, the last one was Canada, and that's a very engine-oriented track, and maybe Persia aren't quite ahead with the engine stuff. But, you know, we've seen the Hansons have some good results this year, haven't we? So maybe, you know, the luck hasn't quite come together, Sebastian. But I think it's a bit maybe a bit harsh to expect him to win as soon as he came in, given the competition he's up against. But, you know, you would like to see him sort of towards the end of the year really making a push towards winning an event, really.
I think so, fellas. I think probably just for Loeb himself, right? I don't know about you, but I think he possibly needs a result to keep him interested.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's obviously a very different discipline. If it was just timing over one lap, I'm sure it'd be difficult to beat. But obviously the racecraft comes into it. And yes, we've seen Petter Solberg be very successful in his move to World Rallycross, but he started in Rallycross. So, you know, he was almost going back to something he was very familiar with, whereas Loeb is obviously pretty much starting from scratch. Yes, he can drive a car very quickly, but he's having to learn the intricacies and you know, the racing aspect of it. But he's had several podiums this year. He is knocking on the door of been at the sharp end. I don't know. I don't think he's a quitter. So let's hope he sticks at it. But like you said, I think if we could see him winning some rounds, it would keep the interest there.
Now, Jack, I want to come to a couple of headlines with regards to calendar issues. Again, seems to probably about every 5 or 6 weeks we seem to talk calendars, and it seems to be an ongoing thing. Obviously, with what's gone on with the cancellation of China, massive concerns with regards to 2017. There's a bit of a story about this.
Yeah, it's like you say, we seem to be talking about calendars all the time, don't we? And we did say, you know, the implications of China being cancelled would rear its head again, and, you know, it has. You know, Mahonan saying, you know, it's a real issue for putting the calendars together for next year. What do they do? Do they give China a spot again? You know, there's so many questions to ask, and the problem with calendars is, especially with major championships, is you're organising stuff so far in advance that it's really difficult to get it right.
Right, certainly from a budget point of view, it was going to be an event that pretty much only the factory teams were going to go to. You know, from a customer team point of view, okay, yeah, perhaps, but certainly there was no privateers going there. You know, there were stories last week, we discussed it, of course, what Hyundai have gone through and Volkswagen have gone through, sending their long-haul kit on so far in advance that now, you know, they're going to have issues of cleaning and stuff before Rally Australia. You know, are teams going to put up with that? Are they going to commit to the calendar, even if it was included?
We talked about this last week, didn't we? And we talked about the problems that cancellation creates, because from a manufacturer point of view, particularly from a Citroën, a Hyundai, a Volkswagen point of view, they want to go there. It's a massively important market to them. You know, they sell hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of cars there. And, you know, they really want to see the world championship that they invest so much in going to China. Having said that, the teams that are operating these cars can see the pitfalls. So I don't think we'll see the end of this one for a while, because I'm sure the board of Hyundai, the board of Volkswagen, etc., will want to see their rally teams going to China, because it's very important to them. However, the rally teams themselves will be thinking, well, what if we're in this position again next year? So I think this one will rumble for a while. It'll be on, it'll be off, it'll be on, who knows?
Anyway, again, we're still talking calendars here, Jack. And obviously, we're all aware of the issues before Sweden this year. Obviously, you know, a snow rally that didn't have snow. And again, there seems to be some route dilemmas again highlighted. And I agree with what he just said. Whoever beat it, you there. Jack, put your clothes back on. This could get awkward. Jack's outside, ladies and gentlemen, and that's why people are beeping at him now. I assume perhaps he's showing a bit of leg or winking at drivers going by. I'm not entirely sure. But Rally Sweden, Jack, again, there seems to be a dilemma with regards to the roof for next year. And of course, you know, could that be at risk?
Yeah, well, you know, it's one we've talked about at length, haven't we? And we did earlier this year when there was problems there. And, you know, we keep talking about them needing to move further north for more snow and things like that, and the budget implications that has. The issue they're having now is that they need to submit a route to the WRC, and they're struggling to do that in terms of predicting the weather forecast for next year and where, you know, basically where the route goes, because if they keep it in the same place, they could have the same issues that they've had this year with a lack of snow. And if they move it further north, they're going to have to raise more money through government funding and sponsorship and things like that. So, you know, it's that trade-off that they're having between moving the event to get the snow and paying more money to do it.
This is Absolute Rally. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal,
or a motorsport fan. We have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate. We can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 441904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. I tell you what, Jack, I want to talk to you about this because your column this week is talking about. I'm jumping from one thing to another here, but it all kind of ties in. You wrote a nice piece this week with regards to Matt Edwards, who, of course, a UK driver over here who's kind of worked his way up the hard way, and he drove a Group N Evo this year, and you know, something which Ryan can relate to as well, and drove it quite quickly. You know, you're talking about why people haven't used the Group N car as perhaps as a nice stepping stone into a four-wheel drive car. And again, that's something that's also been lost in WRC, and you know, there's no kind of real private teams anymore, and I think that's a concern. And people looking at the calendar, whether it's long haul or short haul, are going to be in very much the same kind of situation of the budgets are so tight. Why people aren't taking up using Group N cars rather than using these R5 cars perhaps and getting more events and getting more seat time. I don't know. I think I thought it was a really well written piece, and I probably haven't done it justice, but that was kind of the gist of where you were going. It's such a cost effective way of going to do BRC, but also you can still go and do, you know, some WRC rounds in Group N cars.
Yeah, I think, you know, thanks very much for your kind words. I think, you know, it wasn't meant to focus just on Matt Edwards, but I think, you know, the point there was that Matt has been on his own in the BRC2 Championship this year, and that's been well pointed out by lots of people. It's not been a well taken up category at all, but Matt has done himself justice by competing overall against R5 cars, and that's something that in a way is better than beating people of his, you know, in the same car. He's gone and beaten people in a more modern and specialist built car rather than just a Group N. So, you know, When you look at it that from that perspective, I think, you know, more people should go into down the Group N route, because you can really show yourself up against some of the R5 guys. And, you know, I mentioned Wojciech Uhauer in my column, and he's someone who a lot of people in Europe are talking about at the minute as being, you know, a real bright shining star, if you like. And, you know, he's done the same thing at European level. So, yeah, I mean, it just surprises me that people spend so much on R2s and R2 programs and don't really have that gamble and go for a Group N.
Now, I'm going to ask Ryan Champion, and I don't want to cause a fight between you two boys, but again, we are jumping around a little bit. But just on that, in that column, I don't know whether you've read it yet, right? Jack has said that it's cheaper to run an R2, a Group N car than what it is to run an R2 car.
And I would probably agree with it.
I
certainly wouldn't say it was any more costly. And just to back up what Jack said there, I mean, I said this at the start of the year. I thought we would have seen more people out in good Group N cars on the British Championship, because they cost a fraction of the cost to run to the R5 cars. And to be honest, if you're not in a position to compete overall for a win, Why go in an R5 car? Why not go in a Group N car when you can fight for Group N wins? And, you know, we said at the start of the year, before the championship started, we'd see some good results from Group N cars. And it was only really Matt that went forward with that. But I'm surprised, because the running costs of something like a Group N Mitsubishi are, in relative terms, very, very good. And the other thing you have with, you know, an R2 car, the latest R2 cars devalue very, very quickly, because there's another R2 car comes out. Whereas the Group N cars have obviously, yes, it's not the latest category, and yes, it's maybe not cutting edge, but you can use a good Evo year in, year out for a couple of years, not really lose a lot of money on it, and not spend any more in running costs than you would in an R2 car. No, I entirely agree.
That's a bit of a shock, because I thought you were going to say it was going to cost more to run a Group N car, to be honest with you.
Trying to cause trouble there, Tony.
No, I'm not. I'm genuinely not. I'm a little bit. All I'm saying is I'm a little bit. I read it and I kind of went, And I thought, you know what? I'm going to ask Rye about this.
No, I mean, because you know, the thing about a Group N car is generally they're very reliable. You know, the engines will do the year no problem. Yes, nowadays with dog boxes, you've got a bit of money there, but you have with an R2 car, you know, with a sequential gearbox in an R2 car. Now, the gearbox is as much, if not more, than it is in a Group N car, and that's where a lot of the costs are. Tyre wears less on a four-wheel drive car. Yes, you might go through more discs and pads, but no, I'd definitely say over the year you could run a Group N car for similar sort of money.
So you're telling me I shouldn't buy an R2, I should buy a Group N car in the future?
Well, I'm not saying that, but I certainly think more people should be in good Group N cars if they want to...
When I go home tonight and I have my tea with my missus and we sit around the table and I go, Ryan told me to buy a Group N car.
Value for money wise, there is not a better rally car.
Right, there you go.
In terms of speed, value for money wise.
What's lovely is that she does listen to this podcast sometimes and she'll be in her car now listening. And yeah, love, Ryan said... You heard what the man said, we've got to buy a Group N car.
I think he actually tried to encourage you not to buy one, to be honest, but... That would be my reading into what Ryan said.
Jack Benyon, this is not open for debate. This is not open for debate. Okay. But what is open for debate is the fact that the reason why I went off on this mad tangent is that back in the day, when I was working in the WRC and I was working with lots of privateer teams, and lots of privateer teams were running Group N cars. And okay, yeah, I work with the likes of Toshi Arai, STI with their programs, and okay, yeah, there was money there. But you know, I go all the way back to Stuart Jones, young Welshman who had Silverstone tyres back in 2007 and stuff like that, and they did it on a shoestring. They did the World Rally Championship, the production World Rally Championship, on a shoestring. And the problem that I think we've created to some degree now with the way the WRC is and the way the calendar is and things like that is that we are very, very much in danger now of it's just geared towards the sharp end, which there's an argument that it should be, but there's also an argument that it's still got to be accessible. Or am I off on this one? By all means, boys, put me straight.
Well, but I think the focus goes in line with what the manufacturers want or what the people selling rally cars want. And, you know, there's no focus on Group N anymore, is there? You've only got a choice of two manufacturers. Neither of them are particularly interested in rallying, let's face it. But if you want to go out there and get some good overall results, certainly from a British Championship point of view, it's a great way to do it. But if we, and certainly at ERC level as well, I mean, look at what Lucky Enough did with an Evo 10 last year. You know, he was right up there with the R5 cars. So it can be done, but the problem is there's no manufacturer support behind it, so there's no actual PR behind it, and that's why I think we see everybody going towards the R2 cars and then trying to make the step up to R5 cars.
Do you think there's you made an interesting point before that perhaps some people looking at British Championship, ERC, whatever it may be, maybe there's an element of people either, I use the word deluded because, you know, I can, and I'm just putting it out there, the fact that there's some people who want those cars because they think they can go and compete with the likes of Elvin and people like that, and maybe if they were a bit more honest with themselves, they could go and buy a very, very, very good sharp end Group N car and go and do a lot more rallying. And maybe...
And probably still finish in the same positions overall.
Yeah. So it's vanity. Are we saying that buying an R5 car is vanity?
I think there's one thing you could probably add to that is that, you know, there are some of the younger guys there in the R5s who are using this year as a year of experience and want to get out in the R5 car, and they've got the budget to do it to learn in an R5 car, whereas obviously some of the guys are using the Group N as a cheaper option to get used to four-wheel drive and obviously compete, like we've said already, for good overall positions. I think some of the guys who've got that sort of disposable budget can afford to buy an R5 and do their learning in an R5 rather than doing it in a Group N.
Is that wise, right?
I didn't say it was wise. I just said that's the reasons why they did it.
I think it all depends what you want out of it, doesn't it? If you genuinely think and your backers genuinely think you have the speed to compete, then go out in an R5 car, learn in an R5 car, and you will soon see if either A, you've got the pace, or B, you haven't. There's no two ways about that. But if you like you said a little bit before, if you're honest and open enough to know that you can't beat the Elvin Evans or the Alistair Fishers or Craig Breens, whoever it might be, then, you know, then do you need to go out in an R5 car? That's the thing. But it all depends what, like I said, what somebody's wanting to achieve. And like you said, some people want to be seen in an R5 car. They wouldn't want to be seen in a 4 or 5 year old Mitsubishi. But going back to the point we made a little bit earlier, it's still a hugely cost effective way of getting some good results if you haven't got the budget for an R5 car.
Yeah. I had no idea it was going to take this direction, which is why I was doing this podcast, by the way. And for the record, this was an open discussion, and it was about nobody in particular. If anybody's listening to it, it's a very, very open discussion, which I have with a lot of people all the time, because people ask me these questions all the time as well, when we bump into them and things like that. I just think it's a very healthy debate, and yeah, I just think sometimes we lose drivers very, very quickly when perhaps their budgets could be stretched.
Yeah, and, just to come in, just one other thing there as well. And the other issue you've got is people buying Super 2000 cars now, because the price of Super 2000 cars is dropping rapidly. So people are buying them, but then realizing the running costs of those are astronomical. Because if you actually knock a corner off a Super 2000 car, it's much more expensive than an R5 car. It's World Rally Car money.
And
that's again, I think, what we're seeing. People are thinking, oh, I can buy a Super 2000 car now. So they're buying one, realizing how much the cost to run, and the fact that nowadays they're not that quick against the turbo cars. The running costs are still huge, and you've got to be driving the wheels off a Super 2000 car. You've got to be a Marty McCormack or somebody at that level to actually bring them on the pace of the R5 cars.
Do you know one thing I will say, and this is me being dead open and honest, I would love to go out and buy like a little R2 car or a C2R2 or something, to have a sequential gearbox. As sad as it sounds, I would love to go and drive a car with a sequential gearbox, go and do some rallies in one. I think that'd be great. Whether I go much quicker than going an ST is probably questionable, but some people just want that experience, and myself included, I'd love to be able to do that. The reality is I'm probably not going to do it, certainly not in the foreseeable future anyway. But you know, there's also plenty of people who like to do that, who want that thing now of driving a rally car, which I suppose feels like a proper rally car these days, the way we perceive things. And there's plenty of people out there as well who just go and do it because they can, and it's a lovely position to be in, I guess.
Yeah, and let's not forget, some people do this for fun, and that's what rallying's all about. You know, we week in, week out talk about the elite, really, whether it's WRC, ERC, BRC. We're talking about the people at the top end, the sharp end, who are there to compete to try and win. When in actual fact, there's, you know, 50 or 100 people behind that, BTRD, for example, and they're not there to win. They're just there for fun. And what's fun to one person is very different to another. And it's a thing you've got to be careful with in rallying, is to remember most people are doing it for fun. And also some people competing that want to be at the sharp end, they try that hard that some of the fun goes out of it. And, you know, ultimately, if you're not aiming for the win, then you've got to enjoy it.
Absolutely. Now, Jack, before we go to any other business, because I'm very aware of time as well, and we've got off on tangents, but I love it when that happens anyway. It was ERC. We are going to talk to Chris Ingram later on the podcast, obviously, about the ERC juniors. But again, Jan Kopecky seemed to just turn up on Barham and win.
Yeah, well, I don't know. It wasn't quite as simple as that, I think. I think Alexei Lutkin pushed him very, very hard for the entirety of the event. And, you know, there was, coming into the last stage, I think he'd reduced the gap from 7 to 4 seconds going into the last stage. So, you know, if Alexei hadn't had another issue, like he's had all year pretty much, but, you know, he doesn't seem to be able to finish last stage without a problem, does he? And, well, he doesn't seem to be able to finish any rally without a problem at the minute.
I'll be honest, I did say it very tongue-in-cheek, because I'm talking more about, and I'll talk to Ryan about this in a minute, I'm just talking about the pedigree. He just does, I'm pretty certain he could turn up on a pedal bike and something would happen and he'd still win that rally.
Yeah, well, you know, it's his home rally, and he's used to the kind of surface and the types of roads that they were competing on there, and, you know, obviously he's got the best car Skoda can give him, that being their home rally. But again, you know, I really did think Alexei was going to be very, very close after that last stage.
Is he just pulled up alongside you, Jack?
That was Alexi hitting a water barrel just next to me and flipping over my head. I'm a small dog underneath the car and watching it go over my head.
I am not talking about that Evo going over a small dog. I refuse. That's it. Done. If I can come to you, Lynn, obviously it's one that Skoda, you know, even going back to the days of kind of supposed the super team, they were always very, 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 very passionate. I remember some of the Skoda Trophy events over there and stuff. Some of the guys who I know went over and did them. You know, Skoda, very, very passionate about this rally, their home events and everything else.
Yeah, they are. They always support it, like you said, been the home rally. But Kopecky's a class act, isn't he? You know, he's maybe overlooked a little bit nowadays, but he's setting off again now.
He's got to go in the car, again, guys.
In the background.
I'm on the scene. I'm on the scene, guys. Reporting to you live. And Alexi's back on the move. He's going again.
Thank God he's got going again.
But you know, Kopecky's taken a huge number of wins at European level, in Asia Pacific. He's got lots of good WRC results. Like I said, he's a class act. He's maybe been overlooked a little bit by the young breed of up and coming young superstars, particularly in the Skoda team as well. But he's still a proper driver. But all credit to Lucky Nut for taking the fight to him on what is his home rally.
It was pretty much a top five lockout for Skoda R5, so they got the dream situation, I suppose, Jack, of having three Skodas on the podium. You know, that photo shot, I'm sure, will be one that's in a boardroom today.
Yeah, you know, it's one they do make a big effort for every year, isn't it, like you've already said. And I think their target for the weekend probably was to go and get as many of their cars in the top five as they possibly could, so yeah, they got that.
Yeah,
and, can you just actually paint a scene, Jack, of the rally stage that you're watching?
Dry abrasive tarmac.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Can you get a ground temperature for us so we can feed it back to the tyre manufacturers?
I think it's about 12 degrees.
Is it a bit like the old Japanese days of car park?
Oh, it's
rally?
The sirens.
We've got a hospital on the scene for a car just down the road. I can see it's just gone off.
If you told us that was a safety car going through, we'd have believed it.
Yeah, absolutely. Boys, before we get massively sidetracked, we are at the end of the first section. I want to do our any other businesses. Are we all poised with our any other businesses?
I think so.
Yep.
Okay. Jack Benyon, our crime reporter for Absolute Rally.
Being the captain of self-promotion, I thought I'd give everyone an idea of what I'm up to at the weekend. As you alluded to on last week's show, which I couldn't really say much about, I'm doing the Woodpecker Rally at the weekend. First of all, a couple of thank yous to say, obviously, DMAT for providing my tyres and Vital Equipment and the rally itself for all their help in getting me out. It's going to be my proper gravel rally debut, so I'm out in a Ford Fiesta ST, and John Goff's the guy preparing it for me, so big thank you to John as well. I just wanted to say a few thank yous and tell you all where to look when you want to go and have a laugh at my results, really.
Yeah, so it's John Goff from Rally Me who also does after my car. So it is it was my recce car on what rally was it? What rally did I use? Nikki Grist.
It doesn't matter what it is, really. It'll be going slowly, so it doesn't really matter too much.
It's a quick thing. It's a quick thing. No, seriously.
Not in my hands, it's not.
It hasn't got the dog box in, so the gearing in it is actually quite a quick thing in a straight line. So you'll be right. You've got Rocky on the notes, who both Ryan and I know quite well.
That's right.
Paul Hudson. Yeah. So he'll look after you. But no, Goffey's a good guy. He's helped so many people into the sport.
Absolutely.
In the last 20 odd years, as I say, without him, I would never ever have done a rally, and that's nearly 20 years ago now. So he's done so much for me. So you'll have a cracking weekend, my friend. You'll have a cracking weekend. I will be watching with interest. I know Cameron's quite nervous already. Cameron, who obviously is leading the SC Championship at the moment, he's been told to get some new mirrors because Jack's going to be just leaning on him in the reseeds and stuff. There you go.
I'm wondering if I can drive his car out of a ditch for him like he did for me at the Nicky Grist.
Oh, that's very sweet of you. Yeah, of course, there was that video that went viral of you parking a car in a ditch, wasn't it? Ryan Champion, have you got any other business?
I have, but I was just impressed with Jack's listing of sponsors there. You know, it reminded me of a NASCAR star. I just wondered if he'd been watching...
Of course. No, Shake and Bake, baby. Shake and Bake.
Wondered if he'd been watching the Coca-Cola 600 or whatever it was at the weekend.
Well, no, he's got experience of that, hasn't he? He's brought NASCAR to BTRDA rallying. I like it.
Yeah, so if you can just make sure all the sponsors are up the pillars of the car, Jack, and then when you stood by it and have your picture taken, you know, with the grid girl alongside you, you'll be able to get them all in.
Yeah, there you
go. I'll do my best.
There you go. So it's exciting. So so if you want to check out Jack's car, by the way, you can go on rallyme.co.uk. You'll see Jack's car there in all its glory, and it's also available to hire. So after Jack, you know, it's going to add value to it, isn't it? You know, once Jack Benyon goes,
I'm not sure about Jack that. Benyon.
So there you go. Right, I've got a couple of any other businesses, right? I'm ready when you are. If you want to do yours, and I'll do. I've got two.
Well, I can do. Mine was a little bit of a serious one this week. We were messaging about it off air. Fake Britain this week have drawn attention to the fact that there's actually people selling fake competition seatbelts in the UK at the minute, and it's not just in the UK; it's all across Europe. The big name brands, the Sparkles, the Takatas of this world, and they look genuine, but obviously been sold cheaper, and they're certainly not anything like as strong or as safe as the original items. So something really to be aware of, something probably to spread the message on, because obviously the last thing we want is to see anybody have an accident with a fake seatbelt in it. So something to be aware of, and like I say, keep an eye out for.
Yeah, no, absolutely. What a great point. Yeah, we spoke about it, as I say, earlier in the week, and it really doesn't surprise me, but there you go. My two any other businesses are a very short one. MN from last week, and I'm not just saying this because Jack was on. I'm still reading it. It's brilliant. Loads of stuff on rallies, some stuff that I was aware of, some stuff that I wasn't. Obviously, greatest drivers, greatest, you know, events and things like that. I've really, really enjoyed it, and it's next to the loo. And I'm two-thirds of the way through it, so which is cracking job.
You can still buy that copy of MN online.
Yeah,
just to let everyone know.
On the
Motorsport News website.
Have a look at that one. And my other one, which again could be a slight controversial, could be quite serious, and we could probably do half a podcast on this. I was in my mum's the other day, and I've still got loads of old magazines there. Rally magazines, I hasten to add.
Well, clearly, because they were at your mum's.
Yeah, absolutely. Pat's just not into that type of stuff, to be honest with you. Oh, I don't think she is. I've never asked her. I'm just assuming. But in Rally magazine, I was sort of looking at, like, old Rally XS and stuff like that. Kind of the 90s magazines, really, to be honest with you. And I was looking at results from rallies. And I just wonder, and I know why it was brought in, I just wonder whether Super Rally and Rally 2 has took an element of rallying away that we had some time ago. And I know why it was brought in, but I was looking at some results of people nursing cars through and, you know, finishing plus so many minutes and stuff like that. And, you know, seeing some of the retirements that, you know, really the car wouldn't, the car was basically had no wheels on it if it was retired and stuff like that. And I just wonder whether now that the way WRC is going and the way it's growing, and listen, I've benefited from Rally 2 and Super Rally when I've done Rally GB, but I just wonder now whether we're getting to the state where we still need it.
Well, interesting point. Things have... I definitely know what you're talking about, and, you know, the days of the five-day RSC rallies, for example, in this country, or the older Cropless rally or whatever, Safari rally, it was all about pacing yourself, taking, you know, and making sure you got the car to the end, or not pacing yourself even as it might be, but making sure that you didn't drive beyond the car and didn't brake it, got it to the end. We've certainly lost that from rallying. I guess the other thing that now isn't PR friendly like it used to be is that you can't drag a car down the road on three wheels with no windows left. We also don't have service at the end of every stage, which in those days of multi-day rallies without any super rally, you could repair the car at the end of the stage. So literally, as long as you got it out of the stage, the service crew would rebuild it. You know, we talked about Mark Higgins' British Championship win in the Sunny a couple of weeks ago. Well, you know, I was doing that rally and Mark came out the second last stage with only three wheels on it to win the British Championship because he wanted to fight for the win, and he nearly lost the championship. But in those days, you could service at the end, you could fix it, and away you went. So, yes, it's definitely brought a new element to rallying. Is it desirable? Not necessarily, but have things changed? I guess they have.
It's a reflection of the sport we're in now, isn't it? I think it's more of a sprint than an endurance when you think about it, really. Yeah, and I think that kind of reflects in the rule, I think.
Okay. I just thought I'd put it out there. It was just I'd sat there and I went through so many magazines and looked at so many retirements and you know, results and stuff like that. And this is, as I say, this is in the halcyon days. This is when, you know, we had a lot of factory teams there, and you know, a lot of the big name drivers from yesteryear. I was looking at their results and I was saying, you know, plus 20 minutes and stuff on some rallies, and you go, wow. And then you think, well, no, they had to get finishes, you know, there's a point there to be fought for and things like that. And I just wonder sometimes whether, you know, Super Rally, I completely get everything that Ryan's just said, but by the same token, I just wonder whether Super Rally now, you know, people could just look at it and go, right, leave it there, we'll Super Rally and we'll be, you know, we'll still get a result or whatever,
but
it may be.
I guess the thing is, you can't take it to the end of the stage and get it fixed, can you? So no. If it's damaged, that's it, you park it. Because you know you're never going to get it back to the service park. So service parks have obviously changed the nature of rallying as well, which is a debate for another day.
I think so. I think we've got to the end of the first section. We've done more than enough considering it was a quiet news week. But there you go. It's at this point where we're going to go to a little break. We've probably our second break of the podcast anyway. And then we're going to come back and we're going to be talking to Chris Ingram. This is where Ryan will now go off and get his latte and possibly sit out in the countryside and look over his land. Or something. I don't know what he does on his day off, but I'm guessing it's something like that.
I'm gonna wait for my stage to finish so that I can safely walk down the stage and not be hit by any rally cars or anything like that.
I hope you're in a spectator area only.
I am. That's why I've got to wait until the stage finishes before I can. You know, I don't want any moving rally cars coming towards me, so I'm going to wait until the last car comes through.
Good man. Right. Thank you. Same time, same place next week.
Yep, I'll be here.
Okay, and we'll be back after this break, me and Jack Benyon, and we'll be talking to ERC Junior winner Chris Ingram.
This is Absolute Rally. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic tourism events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. We were meant to have me and Jack, and we were going to talk to Chris Ingram, and we were going to congratulate him on a fantastic win and everything else. But Jack's gone AWOL on us. We can't find Jack. Jack will be listening to this now saying, well, I was ready at 4:30, Tony. You were ready at 4:30, but Chris Ingram wasn't ready at 4:30 because Chris Ingram was having a mid-afternoon snooze. But to be fair, mate, you were probably due one. Welcome back to Absolute Rally.
Cheers, Tony. Thank you.
To be fair, mate, you've had a busy couple of weeks, so I can completely understand the snooze. Are you feeling refreshed?
Yeah, I am, actually. It's been a pretty crazy fortnight, WRC Germany and Barham at the weekend, so...
I tell you what, let's do...
I drove all the way home.
Did you? Fair play to you. Not in the rally car, obviously.
No, unfortunately.
That would be hard work, though. Imagine that on your back. Anyway, let's do this in some kind of chronological order. Rally Germany, there was a big push to get you there, and it wasn't the Rally Germany you wanted, was it? Or indeed any of us wanted for you?
No, like, a lot of people helped me get there, and maybe I was just too eager to go and show my pace. And to be fair, we went off at the end of the first stage, but it was one of those corners that a lot of people got caught out on. So usually you doubt yourself a lot when you go off, but that many people were going off, even when we were slowing down people and they were still going off. So it was just one of those things.
Is it one of those when you kind of get there? I've had a corner like that where I went off once, and there's so many drivers there that you kind of end up just kind of, it's almost like a therapy session because everybody has the same conversation. Go, did you do that? Yeah, I did that as well. I can remember doing it on the Manx where there was four cars and mine was the fourth car on its roof in the same field about 10 years ago, 12 years ago. And you kind of feel, you do feel better, don't you, that somebody else has gone off in the same place as you.
Yeah, but everyone else got away with it, so it was even worse, eh?
Well, because who else was on your corner? Because didn't John Armstrong had an incident on the same corner, didn't he?
Yeah. What happened is, so Elliot was a bit winded, so he stayed in the car. And just after he got out, John Armstrong came along, absolutely flat out into the trees, bouncing off them and straight into our car sideways, like McRae style, and carried on. I was just stood there on, because we hit a wall.
Yeah.
I was just stood at the top of the wall, like, shocked. It was, like, surreal, really.
Yeah.
So I thought there was a marshal running, slowing the cars down. Ran up the road, and there was a guy there, but I'm not sure what he was doing. He did have the warning triangle out and stuff. So one of the next guys in the Fiesta comes along. I'm slowing him down, and he still goes off, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a bit mental.
so take us through. I suppose from people who are into the sport and you know obviously listen to our podcast and stuff like that. What happens from that moment where you know you're not going to Super Rally or Rally 2, whatever you want to call it now? What happens then? What happened when you get back to the service park? What does Chris Ingram and Elliot do then?
Yeah, well, I knew after 5 minutes that the cage was bent. Because
right.
We hit a tree first
okay.
and then bounced into a wall, you see. So that was devastating because we knew it. Barron was the main thing and we had to get the seat time because both my teammates had already done a German event the week before, so I was already down on a bit of seat time. So they went on to dominate the event in the class. So it was a disaster, not going to lie. So it was too depressing to stay at the rally. So on the second day, my old co-driver had a terrible crash and we just decided to go.
Yeah.
And go to Prague because couldn't be there anymore.
Yeah. So do you go and have 24 hours where you just chill out or whatever, or are you already on to bar and me thinking, right, well, there's nothing I can do about that. The car's with the team. There's nothing I can do now. All I can do is focus on getting ready for next weekend.
Yeah, exactly. That was exactly what we did and best thing to do for sure.
So damage-wise, you've already mentioned the cage was bent. You know, for the uninitiated, you can do a little bit of fettling and a little bit of work perhaps to straighten that out. I'm assuming that's not what happened. I'm assuming the car was shelled.
Yeah, they gave us a brand new car. So
wow.
It was an unbelievable effort from the team.
Wow. So that was a car already built, or did they manage to salvage? You did basically put the bits on from the old car onto a new shell, or what? How did that work?
Yeah, they put our engine and stuff, which was fine, back into a new shell. So
yeah.
There was a bit that was still there. So yeah.
Happy days.
Just mega effort. So.
I guess then you're focusing on Barham. You know what day did the recce start for you, mate?
It was Tuesday. Tuesday evening, we signed on and then started the recce. So
yeah. So again, you know, even it's still not a great deal of time, even though you were unfortunate enough to go out from Rally Germany. Still not a great deal of time, is it? You know, obviously to finish that event and get away from that event and get yourself over to Czech and kind of focus on the job in hand. And there was no, obviously, Elliot was a little bit winded. I assume you were okay. It was just more a bit of pride, really. You just wanted to just go out and put
exactly.
it straight. Yeah. So, recce good. You know, you've been writing your own notes for a young man. You've been writing your own notes pretty much, more or less from day one. Was there something special about those Barham notes? Did you feel you'd wrote a good set of notes?
Yeah, like, because in Germany, we went off, it was the first slippy corner of the stage, the start of the stage was bone dry, and then under the trees,
yeah,
we just came barreling into it, it was wet, and it was like ice, but in Barham, that did worry me a bit, because a lot of it's in the trees and in forests, but luckily it was dry all week, and even in the forest, it was bone dry, just bits of gravel, so we were quite lucky in that respect that didn't harm my confidence, but we did make mega notes, and Elliot did an awesome job too. He was just perfect all week.
The first stage, you know, you put your marker down 5 seconds out of your nearest rival. Did you know then that it was your event, or did you just feel like, I know you're a confident young man, but to take 5 seconds out of Griebel, was it one of those ones where you think, okay, maybe, you know, he might have had a problem, or, you know, he might have had a arse, or whatever it may be, and you've just had a clean run, you know, or did you feel that was the confidence already there to take it forward?
To be honest, like, I never thought I was going to beat Griebel on tarmac, so I had to really pull something different out of the bag, and he's probably not going to listen to this, so I'll tell you that I played some mind games with him, and all week I acted like I'd lost all my confidence.
Right.
And even on the shakedown, I was putting rubbish times in on purpose.
Okay.
So he was probably a bit overconfident and just went and smashed it on the super special. And then on stage three, which was the first proper stage, we took 10 out of him, and I think that had broken him a bit.
That's some going, as I say. We spoke to you on this podcast. I've spoke to you as well, and obviously, you know, tarmac was always going to be the one where you felt you were perhaps behind the cue ball, and yeah, as I say, it was impressive to, what, you know, obviously we were watching the times coming in and stuff like that, and you go, okay. And genuinely, I was looking at it, and, you know, I didn't know too much about, you know, Griebel, for instance, until you were telling me about him, and you know, where you felt the competition was going to come from. And my gut feeling was then, maybe he's had a problem, and that's no disrespect to you, but at that point I was thinking, maybe he's having a problem, or something's not quite right, or whatever. And then obviously you start following it, and you start looking at what's going on, and obviously I seen some of the updates you were giving, you go, okay, Chris is really, really on it. And as I say, it was great to walk, being very UK centric, and I apologize for our overseas listeners, but, you know, again, I've known you for such a long time, and obviously to see you grow up and do some of these events and then go out and dominate an ARC junior round like this was, for me, this was possibly your best ever drive.
Yeah, I think day one, that was definitely my best ever tarmac drive.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So happy about it.
And
on day two, I was a bit, I just had to get it home, so.
But you kept it together. You kept it together as well, which I think, you know, the pace has never been in question. I guess sometimes, you know, you think back to the circuit and stuff like that when you had the incident in the Twingo where you got the Spirit.
Exactly. Yeah.
Things like that. So now it's coming together where you can keep it together, and obviously that mental strength we've made reference to once or twice, and you're talking about, you know, psychological warfare and stuff like that with a teammate. You know, it all comes into play, and I guess you can take that now moving forward. Obviously, you're still now leading the ERC juniors. Mathematically, what's going to happen on the remaining rounds for you now?
My teammate has to win in Latvia. So.
And what's the worst case for you, Chris? Have you guys just got to be on a podium, or what? Where have you got to be?
It doesn't matter.
Right, okay.
If you come second and I retire, I'm still won, so the pressure's definitely on him, I think.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. So you just have to be there. You just have to be there, and you know.
Even if I won in Barham, I expected him to be second, or, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So for him to, because he super rallied and managed to come fifth still, but that won't be good enough for a scoring round. So
what you,
couldn't have gone better.
You know, it's entirely up to you. You may want to keep your cards close to your chest on this one. If you do, I don't blame you. But you go to the next round, which is
Latvia.
So you go to Latvia next. So if you won that round, there's nothing that could happen. Doesn't matter where you are, but, so, you know, if you win, he can't win. Do you see the moment where I'm going?
Yeah, that's definitely what I'm aiming for.
Is that the plan?
Hopefully there will be a few local heroes, like in Estonia, who will turn up and be quick anyway.
Yeah. But obviously you've still got somebody that is going to take maximum points because they may not be registered. So I guess you've got to think about that as well, haven't you?
Yeah, but we're only judging ourselves against the registered guys usually anyway.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking about point scoring opportunities and stuff, that's all. Obviously, you can have the local guys rock up, but they're not going to score points, are they? So it'll work its way backwards to the first ERC junior finisher. So, you know, that's where it comes into play. But obviously, if you've got everything in the bag, then it's I suppose it's a weird one, really. You could go and drive it and have a leisurely day out, or you could just go and push on. And, you know, it doesn't really matter if you push on and, you know, it doesn't quite go according to plan, because he needs to win. But I guess you winning is the best possible scenario. You win, you secure a championship, and it stops your main rival from winning the rally and keeping the championship open. You know, you've basically wrapped it up there and then.
Yeah, that's definitely what I'm going for. Like, I never, like, Darren was probably my worst event because I had a huge crash there last year. So if you look at all the events, that was probably the one you'd think I was going to be a bit slower on. So I think I'm going to definitely push for that win again.
Fantastic. Now, obviously, it was last time we spoke, you were at the point of changing co-driver. Elliot's coming. I assume that's working out. That seems to be a perfect marriage to me, that one.
yeah, it's been awesome. Like, he's a really positive character. So we've been stuck in a car together for 20 days now. So, and we've not really fallen out. So
that's always. I was going to say that is always a bonus. Jeez, that's always a bonus. So fair play. No, I must admit, I followed Elliot's career a little bit. He very, 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 very nearly sat with me a long time ago. So I've kept my eye on Elliot for a long time and watched what he's been doing. And I must admit, when you announced that you were going to make a change, and then I seen who it was, I completely got it, and I think it was a cracking appointment to really do. So Elliot's in with you for the rest of the year then.
Yeah, that's the plan, definitely.
Good man. Have you allowed yourself to think beyond what's going on in 2016? Or are you just completely and utterly focused?
You can't help but do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, if we do well in Latvia, then we'll be going to Cyprus in an R5 car. So yeah. What an unbelievable thing to motivate me for Latvia.
Yeah. Well, obviously, we'll be following you, Chris. And I did text you. I'm not embarrassed to say I'm mega, mega proud. Really, really pleased to see the result when it came in. And it's great. And we do appreciate you coming on Absolute Rally when you just woke up, which is always a bonus. Now, last week's podcast, we finished off with Brendan Reeves. Brendo, cracking sport. And you know, he listens to the podcast and stuff. And normally we do kind of any other business, anything that we're thinking about what's going on in rallying at the moment and stuff like that. And Brendo had a couple of thoughts and you know, whenever we have guests on. So is there anything in rallying at the moment you quite like to get off your chest or a thought or an idea in any other business?
Just about Gaban and Stefan, really.
Okay.
They've obviously had a horrible crash, but hopefully they'll come back. If not this year, quickly next year, because I think they've got future world champion potential, those guys.
I know you're in contact with Gaban. How are they both doing?
Very sore, but they're doing okay. Good spirits, I think.
That's important. That's important. You know, we spoke about it last week, and it's unfortunate, but, and I don't say it flippantly, but when you get involved with a Hinkelstein, it never ends well. And you know, you just see some of the stuff. You think about Petter's crash a few years ago and stuff like that. And it was one of those sickening moments where you see a car. Luckily, I knew the guys. Obviously, they were sore and they'd been airlifted, but you know, they were conscious and things like that. And then I seen the images of the car, and I must admit, I'm glad I seen it that way around. I think if I would have seen it the other way around, it, I think it would have knocked me sick, to be honest with you. I think it would have knocked me sick. Yeah. But
a dangerous event in many ways. That
it is. Well, listen, pass on our best to Gaban. Obviously,
I will do.
Yeah, it's it'll be good. And as I say, Chris, we do appreciate your time. And everyone, thank you for the download for this week's podcast. We are halfway through our season, and you know where we live. It's Absolute_Rally on Twitter, and you can find us on facebook.com/AbsoluteRally. And Chris, what's your Twitter? What's your Twitter, just in case anybody wants to go on?
Chris Ingram GB.
Of course it is. Wouldn't be anything else, would it? Chris, thank you so much for joining us on Absolute Rally. Folks, we will be back same time, same place in your little podcast hold next week.